Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Brewers podcast, joining you on a Monday morning. I think it's possible to say the last eight Brewers games might be, maybe hyperbole here, but might be one of the best stretches in Milwaukee Brewers history. And it includes a 12-0 loss. The main event, of course, Saturday night, the Brewers throw their first no-hitter since 1987, the second in franchise history. Corbin Burns, Josh Hader combine on it. Eight innings from Burns. They allowed just one base runner, 16 strikeouts, a ridiculous performance. And the Milwaukee Brewers sitting very, very pretty in the playoff chase to boot. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. And on the other line is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter, covering the Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Todd, we had quite the show. I mean, to go back to those eight games, you get a complete game shutout for the first time since 2014. You get a walk-off grand slam from Daniel Vogelbach on Sunday, which I know we didn't really get a chance to talk about last week. And then you got three blowouts. The Brewers themselves get blown out on Labor Day, but since then have three blowouts of their own, a 4-3 win, and this no-hitter on Saturday night, which is very special. I know that you weren't physically in Cleveland, but you were there for some of the post-game interviews and everything. And I don't know when you thought it was real. It barely registered with me. That game moved very quickly. And, you just wake up at the seventh or eighth inning and realize, okay, this actually could happen. The Lorenzo Cain catch might've been the trigger. As you were watching that game, when did you realize this is, there's a really good chance this is different from some of the other close calls that the Brewers have had, this year and in recent memory?
Well, let's start off by saying that was not a no-hitter, according to a lot of people.
Oh, because there were two pitchers instead of one.
Yeah, and I'm loudly rolling my eyes as I say that. I realize social media and Twitter is a way to allow everybody to express their opinion, but give me a break. I mean, this is something historic, something that the Brewers have not done since 1987. I realized that Corbin Burns didn't finish it, but it was a tremendous pitching performance from start to finish by two all-timers for the Brewers at this point. And what was the bottom line? Cleveland finished with no hits. That's a no-hitter. So let me get off my soapbox anyway. the Lorenzo Cain catch, to me, I chuckled after he made it because – instantly, what is anybody gonna think who grew up around here and saw that team in 87, that game, the highlight? Robin, and it wasn't as dramatic. It wasn't to finish the game. It wasn't as tough a catch as Robin made. But still, I mean, there were some similarities going in the right center and making the catch and Lowe coming up, shaking his head, saying not today. It was just at that point, I think you felt like it was kind of destined to happen. And I think it's cool that Corbin Burns was allowed to be able to go out there and at least pitch the eighth. To me, it would have obviously been a little bit more dicey, sending Devin Williams out there for the eighth, not so much because it's Devin Williams, but there's just more variables in play at that point. Corbin Burns was in a groove, obviously, and pitching well. And, he was able to get through that eighth with minimum trouble. So just to have two pitchers teaming up to do it, two guys who are very close friends, just basically the stars align that night and just an incredible performance. And as somebody who has a vote for Cy Young this year, I was literally the day before doing some reading, looking at stats, trying to start boning up on, where is my vote going to go? How is it going to go? And obviously there's still a little bit of time left in the regular season, but that might have clinched it for Corbin Burns for me. Just tremendous year, numbers off the charts. You look at the win-loss record, it's a little bit deceiving, obviously, especially with how dominant he's been for the most part. A couple fewer starts than the leaders, basically because of the COVID thing in May. But by every measure, it is what a Cy Young Award winner should be, just completely dominant over the course of the season. And, other guys have 2 weeks to prove me wrong, but including Corbin Burns, if he has two bad starts or something the rest of the way, maybe that'll change it. But right now, I don't know how you couldn't go anybody but Corbin Burns at this point.
Yeah, I want to talk about a few of those things, and we'll stay with the Cy Young thing. It's interesting because I've been operating under the assumption, and odds makers are too, that Walker Buehler of the Dodgers is the front runner there. But his teammate, Max Scherzer, has started to get that narrative momentum, I would say. You see that with a lot of national guys who love Scherzer's case. And then Scherzer on Sunday goes out and throws eight near no-hit innings of his own against San Diego, gives up a hit in the eighth, sort of, one day later reminds people that he's still here. And what's interesting about having Scherzer in the mix is that I think the biggest knock on Corbin Burns's case is that he hasn't thrown as many innings as Walker Buehler, not by a long shot, but Scherzer has only thrown a small handful of innings more than Corbin Burns. I think if you have Scherzer in the mix, you kind of negate that as one of the main, like, sort of metrics on the rubric. And Corbin Burns, secondary numbers, all of the advanced stats favor Corbin Burns. I mean, he's having a historic season if you're talking about something like fielding independent pitching. If you're talking about ERA now, Max Scherzer has a little bit of a lead on him, but Corbin Burns just plain old fashioned has way more strikeouts or something than Walker Buehler. He's right there with Max Scherzer in that category. So I find this race pretty fascinating. I don't know if votes will be split between Scherzer and Buehler, but I do know that Corbin Burns is now like the clear-cut Milwaukee representative, where before you could have said maybe Woodruff, maybe Peralta, but now that's not happening. Corbin Burns is kind of the guy at the front of this. And I agree with you. I think he is the front runner, but it's really hard to say. I think Walker Buehler and Max Scherzer both have compelling cases on their own. But I'm fascinated. I know you got to vote, so you probably can't go into too great a depth of the comparisons between these guys. But to me, that this performance definitely gave Corbin a leg up that he didn't have before. And now I'm starting to think this is very real, that he could win this award.
Yeah. You mentioned all the advanced statistics, and those are really the things that tilt the field in Corbin Burns' favor. I'm just looking at the numbers right now, and Corbin Burns has four fewer starts than Buehler, two fewer than Scherzer. Corbin Burns has about 34 fewer innings than Buehler, 10 fewer than Scherzer. The hits, relatively speaking, are all about equal. Where Corbin Burns, across the board of the conventional statistics, really separates himself, he's only allowed 5 home runs in 152 innings. Compare that to Walker Buehler, 18 homers in 186 innings. And of course, Scherzer, that's kind of the one bugaboo about his game. He's allowed 20 homers in 162. Walk number is way down. Burns has 29 compared to 47 for Buehler, 33 for Scherzer. And then the whip, they're all right there. They're all within striking distance of each other. Burns is only 9 strikeouts away from Scherzer in 10 fewer innings. Opponent's batting average, all about the same, although Scherzer's 175. So, I mean, really, those numbers are you can really split a hair. But once you start getting into the advanced stuff, like you mentioned, field and pen and pitching, things of that nature, and just some of the feats that he's accomplished over the course of the season. And to me, what he means to the Brewers pitching staff and the team, the difference that he makes when he's out there, to me, that makes him the guy. But again, there's still time, and there's still room for my mind to be changed at this point. Part of the tough thing about voting too, it's good and it's bad, is that, I see Corbin Burns pitch way more than I see Max Scherzer or Walker Buehler. It's kind of the argument back in the day of, when I voted for Ryan Braun for MVP, I voted for Christian Yelich for MVP. Familiarity kind of helps you, but it also hurts you at the same time. So it's a really good argument. It's a fun year to have a vote, honestly, because these guys are so close together. Brandon Woodruff's got a couple starts too. Maybe he can get his name back in the mix a little bit. Couple more dominant starts, it's possible. Make it even more interesting. But these are kind of the fun arguments that you have as the season draws to a close.
Yeah, you got a good one. For example, I wouldn't want an AL MVP vote this year. I mean, it'd be fun to have one, of course, but that's a unanimous vote waiting to happen. And if you don't vote for Shohei Ohtani, you're overthinking it. So it's nice to have one of those contested races, I would say. I know you weren't covering the Brewers in 1987, but you're from the area. You grew up around here. I'm guessing you do have some memories of that Juan Nieves no-hitter. And you kind of alluded to it. What's so nice about this is, from a storyline perspective, Corbin Burnes is having this all-time dominant season for a Brewers pitcher. And Josh Hader getting his name on it, yeah, it's only one inning, but like it's hard to do what Josh Hader has done, to be this consistent level of dominance as a reliever for this many years in a row, for 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row, however you want to look at it. So he is of great value to this franchise. It's kind of cool that he gets to be part of this achievement. You know, Juan Nieves, I don't want to disparage him. His name is synonymous with this achievement. Everyone knows what he did in Brewers history, but because of injuries and whatnot, he wasn't really a guy that you look back and say he's one of the great pitchers in Brewers history. I mean, he really wasn't. He just had a really good night. That's part of kind of what makes no-hitters, sort of adds to the, you know, the romance of no-hitters is to sort of have that randomness to some degree. But tell me what you remember from 1987. I mean, obviously we've all seen the replay, the catch. We know kind of the team streak being in the context of that 12-game winning streak to start the season. But do you recall it being as big a deal as it certainly is looking back on it 34 years later?
Oh yeah, for sure. One of those seminal moments in franchise history, and especially for a franchise that, you know, until recently has not had a lot of things to feel good about or cheer about on the whole, you know, talking about championships and division championships and that sort of thing. Juan Nieves was a very interesting name, I guess, in Brewer lore, just a guy who everything kind of came together for him that night. And from that point on, just never could really come close to matching that feat. And had a lot of shoulder problems, never really panned out, I think, the way a lot of people thought he would pan out. It's cool that he's still involved in the game. I believe he's still a pitching coach. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but he has been in recent years and in the major leagues. And you know, come to town with whatever team he was coaching, and you always see that name and you remember it. It's interesting to me that, as far as I remember, I don't think he's really been back much, you know, and celebrated for what he's done, what he did in that no-hitter with the Brewers. You know, not that there's anything against Juan Nieves from the franchise or anything. Bill Schroeder obviously is around all the time, and he's got some great stories to tell from that. And I thought it was really cool, he of all people being the analyst last night on the broadcast and calling that game, and really genuinely seemed thrilled for Omar Narvaez and obviously for Corbin Burnes and Josh Hader too. Really, really was a cool perspective to hear him talk about it and have him calling it after all, having it happen after all these years again. And, you know, even he tells that great story about how he wasn't even supposed to be catching that night. Obviously, BJ Sirhov was the Brewers starting catcher, but had some unexpected or emergency dental work and wasn't able to to answer the bell. And all of a sudden Schroeder's in the game, and lo and behold, he catches the franchise's first no-hitter, and that stands up from 87 all the way until 2021. So really, really cool to see it, really cool to analyze it from all the different angles. And I believe I read last night that now the Cleveland Indians, of all teams, the team that's been no-hit three times this year, has the longest streak of no-hitters, I think, at 34 years, I believe.
That was the Brewers. Cleveland's actually up to 40 years now this season.
40 years? So. Okay, that's what it was. Yeah. All right. So I was correct, though, that it is Cleveland that is it's been a long time, obviously, since they've had one. And it wasn't San Diego, wasn't Musgrove, he was the first guy to ever throw one earlier this year, right, for them?
Correct, yeah. So that put the Brewers in second behind Cleveland at that point.
Yeah, so you knocked out two of the three longest standing droughts as far as the no-hitters go. So, again, just a really, really cool thing. And, you know, just another really cool thing to happen to a group that is really appearing to be special here. And Tom asked the question to Josh Hader last night or at the very end about, you know, it's just is this kind of the latest sign that this is a magical group or there's more magic to come? And he said, yeah, definitely. And it just seems like more and more of these guys are saying that we're on the 2018 team are saying that this team, this group is even more special and has more of that magic. So I guess time will tell whether or not that's true, but just in terms of the lead they've built up, you know, they should have the division clinched by the weekend, I would think, next weekend.
Yep.
All the numbers they put up, the historic pitching, it's just been a remarkable season to this point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. 9 no-hitters now. That's a big league record. Juan Nieves, actually, assistant pitching coach for the Detroit Tigers. That's the next team up for the Brewers. There you go, man. Notebook lead is ready to go here.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. But I'd have to try to search him out on Tuesday.
Definitely. So the Brewers will be in Detroit for 2 games, Tuesday and Wednesday. A couple off days bookending that. So they have kind of a decent little stretch of the schedule here. They could, in theory, have clinched their spot if everything goes right by that Thursday before they even get back to American Family Field. I wouldn't expect every single game to go that way, but things have gone very well lately. The Reds have lost a couple in a row here. The magic number is down to 5. So, again, there's a chance they could clinch before the Brewers are even back in town. More likely, though, like you said, that weekend, the kickoff of a 10-game homestand. They're almost certainly going to clinch somewhere in that window. You know, one last thought before we leave this. I guess... If there's, I completely agree with you, by the way, on the two pitcher thing, because you've waited 34 years. Like, I'll take it. I mean, it's like the last thing. The Brewers have been to the playoffs now in the last few years. They've had MVPs, they've had Rookie of the Year, you know, they've had award winners. This is kind of that last thing that most Brewer fans of my generation haven't experienced. So the two pitchers, for who cares? That's great. I can see it being more, since it is sort of an intangible success, it's very much a mystique thing. It's not necessarily, it's one game contributing to a playoff run, but it's also not like anything more than that to manager Craig Counsell, who's trying to think of the big picture the whole time. So I could understand someone also adding that addendum to it, like, well, it's just to be cool. It's just a cool thing, and it'd be cooler if it was just one guy. I, though, was surprised that Corbin Burns even went out for that 8th inning. You're saying that would have sort of added the variables. You know, he was already up to 100 pitches at that point. I kind of thought they would pull him out because it was pretty clear to me then that there's no way he was going to go all 9. They sent him out for the 8th. He has a good inning, but at 115, I mean, again, there was no way I thought he was coming out for the 9th. No way. I don't know if you thought differently as you were watching it in real time. But to me, the best chance for a no-hitter at that point was having Josh Hader pitch the 9th inning. The guy's lights out. So that actually enhanced, in my mind, the possibility that was going to happen. Did you think maybe, though, that Craig Counsell would get caught up in the magic of the moment and send Corbin out one more time?
Well, I think he did in allowing him to pitch the 8th.
I think,
you know, Craig Counsell, obviously, he's got to look ahead. You know, he's worried about keeping Corbin Burns as fresh and as healthy as possible for the stretch run, which is the most important thing. But he also has a great sense, as we all know, of history and of personal achievements, how rare an opportunity that is for a pitcher. And, you know, a guy in Corbin Burns who obviously, you know, he has great trust in him and him understanding his body and knowing how he feels and everything. And it was interesting seeing those camera shots of him talking to Corbin between the innings. And, you know, I thought as I was watching the game was give him a chance to go out there for the 8th inning and just see what happens. You know, who knows, maybe he has an Adrian Hauser 3-pitch, 3-out inning like he did in Minnesota, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, hey, this is within the realm of possibility, or, you know, something crazy happens like that, or he throws 5 pitches, 6 pitches, whatever. And then you can talk about it as a possible reality. Obviously that didn't happen, but it got you one step closer. And then, you know, the door is most likely going to be slammed with Josh Hader. And that's certainly what he did. So, you know, Craig Counsell, as we all know, he's certainly got a great, memory, a great feel for the history of the franchise, having grown up around it, and a great understanding of what personal achievements and milestones mean to players. So I think he did a great job of balancing those two things. Obviously wasn't going to let him finish the no-hitter at 115 pitches, but gave him that last opportunity to go out there in the 8th. If something crazy happened, maybe he could have gone out for the 9th. It didn't happen, so hey, you got close. We're going to give it to Josh. We're going to let him finish it off. And, you know, you got a no-hitter in the books for the franchise, for you and for Josh Hader. How can you beat that?
I continue to be baffled by how the Corbin Burns of 2019 is the Corbin Burns that we have seen this year and in 2020. It just, I can't believe we're here. I can't believe Corbin Burns is still pitching for the Brewers after 2019.
It's amazing. It's not to cut you off, but I was saying that during the game too last night. It is unbelievable. You know, like I can remember talking to Corbin Burns after games that he pitched in. Like I remember that three homer game when he gave up to Atlanta in 2019. Just got crushed, and standing by his locker after the game and talking to him and just like, you know, deer in the headlights, like not knowing what the heck happened and trying to put a good face on it. And, you know, we're trying to do a job, but at the same time, you have compassion. The guy's a human being and he's out there trying to compete, and just nothing that he's doing is working. It's hard to watch, and it's hard to ask those questions sometimes. Never in a million billion years would I have thought then that 2 years from now, a little over 2 years from that point, we'd be talking about a guy who's done historic things and just dominating the National League and having taken part in a no-hitter, et cetera. It's just so far beyond the pale. And Corbin Burns just deserves all the credit in the world for not giving up and, you know, continuing to compete and doing what he can to turn the page on that and to get better and to learn from it. And, you know, the story's been told. It just completely revamped his arsenal, turned his focus to a different set of pitches, used the sports psychologist in the offseason, took advantage of all the technology and all the brain power the Brewers have in their pitching lab, and all those pieces kind of came together. We saw a glimpse of it last season during the 2 month season, and this season again carried it over and has been just completely dominant over the course of the entire schedule. So, you know, hats off to him. It's been an incredible run, and you know, we keep talking about it. It seems like podcast after podcast, but it's just amazing the how well the Brewers are situated right now. And of course it's all dependent on health, but you've got three just absolute studs in the prime of their careers or entering the prime of their careers. And then you throw in the way Adrian Hauser has pitched on occasion and is pitching lately. And then Eric Lauer, who all of a sudden is looking like Cy Lauer, as we like to joke around about. Oh, by the way, there's Aaron Ashby throwing out of the bullpen, and Ethan Small's dominating at AAA. So it's like it's almost an embarrassment of riches for the Brewers at this point with starting pitching. And who could have ever guessed that would ever happen in this franchise?
Eric Lauer taking a no-hitter into the sixth on Sunday. It was 15 straight hitless innings the Brewers pitched against Cleveland, starting with the last inning on Friday night. So, Quite the run. Eric Lauer and the Brewers getting an easy win on Sunday, 11-1. Brewers bats, they've just been awesome. But kind of one of the interesting footnotes to the no hitter would have been Owen Miller, who is a graduate of Ozaukee High School, Milwaukee area native, hit the ball that Lorenzo Cain flagged down in the eighth, that sort of the big play, I guess, of the game. That would have been interesting. And Lorenzo Cain has been great lately. I mean, he hits a grand slam in this series. He looks to be probably as spry as he's been, as healthy as he's been over the last couple of years. I mean, he won a gold glove in 2019, but it was no secret he was playing hurt for most of the season. He opts out early in the 2020 campaign and still wasn't 100% when this season began, but he's looking good. And the reason I bring him up is trying to figure out what they're going to do on this roster when the playoffs roll around in the outfield. We talked about Jackie Bradley Jr. and the struggles he's had ad nauseum, but like you go back to July 27th, and that is not a small sample now. He's got an OPS of 345. I mean, he's obviously he does what he does on defense, and that's important, but especially with Lorenzo Cain playing well, I just got to think that if they can get Tyrone Taylor healthy and he's on a rehab assignment now, even though Bradley's the lefty bat, I think they have to go with Ty Taylor. I mean, they paid Jackie Bradley a fair amount of money to be here, and it hasn't worked out, at least on offense. I don't know what they're going to do with him on this playoff roster, and he's probably going to be one of the last decisions they have to make. What do you see for him? Do you think there is a way that he is still on this postseason roster?
Yeah, I think I'd go the other way, JR, on that one. His defense, you know, the bat, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he just, it's like he can't even make contact anymore. It doesn't matter what is thrown to him. He just swings right through everything. It's incredible. But I think you take the glove, very valuable defensive replacement late in games, obviously. There's a chance, you know, with his experience, his postseason experience, you can't discount that. You know, hopefully everybody kind of turns the page on what they've done in the regular season and you know, goes into the off season or into the postseason, I mean, with a fresh slate. Nobody needs that more than Jackie Bradley Jr., obviously. You know, Tyrone Taylor has not been there before. You know, Grant, he's been really good for the team, and I have a feeling he's going to be playing a much bigger role on next year's team. But this amount of time that he's lost to this injury, I realize he's back, you know, rehabbing in the minor leagues now, but he's lost a pretty significant chunk of time during an important part of the season here down the stretch. I think that may well wind up being his undoing as far as the playoff roster calculus goes. You know, he does have the power potential. The right-handed bat in the outfield obviously is a nice weapon as well. He's able to play all three positions. So you could definitely make an argument for that. But I don't know. I just feel like the money that's being paid to Jackie Bradley Jr., the defense, the experience in the postseason, I think those things are all valuable as well. And, you know, maybe a different season, you know, the postseason as opposed to the regular season, maybe you can get things going a little bit. He certainly, I don't think he's going to start any games, but, you know, I think he could be in the mix late in games as a defensive replacement. But, you know, my mind can be changed on that as well. And there definitely are going to be some interesting roster discussions as we get down closer to that. And as we know, teams, especially the Brewers, will wait till the absolute last second to announce what they're going to be doing. So that's always one of the more anticipated things, obviously. But so we've got a few more weeks to figure that out. But, you know, again, good conversations to have, fun conversations to have at this point.
Yeah. And, Brett Anderson would be another one of those. Like, you don't know if they're necessarily going to need that fourth, fifth starter, especially the way Adrian Hauser has pitched. Like you mentioned, you could maybe piggyback him with Ashby, like we've talked about before, or maybe Brett Anderson has a role out of the bullpen, but then does that come at the expense of Brett Suter? I would have said Daniel Vogelbach had no chance to make a postseason roster because he and Rowdy Tellez are essentially the same player. But now we have news that Rowdy Tellez is on the 10-day injured list with something that looks like it's going to keep him out pretty close to the end of the season here with only 3 weeks left. And along with Willie Adames, like at some point, these are a little concerning. Like, this is the wrong time of year to have actual injuries. Now they're going to be more liberal in using the injured list and cautious because they're going to win the division. There's no reason to push these guys. But I guess I feel like Rowdy Tellez is actually pretty much in danger of making that first playoff roster with this injury kind of abutting the end of the season. I don't know how you look at that. And same with Adames. I mean, I'm sure they're going to try to bring him back, but how concerning do you find that one as you read between the lines? Do you feel like this quad injury is going to be the type of thing that significantly limits what he can do when we get to when we finally get to October?
Yeah, it does. Leg injuries are not good. I think the Brewers are going to be super cautious with Willie Adames, you know, basically going down the stretch. I think that it would make sense to, you know, if he's feeling good by maybe the last week of the season, get him back in there, get him going again, get him some at bats and have him kind of hit the ground running for the postseason. Rowdy Tellez, you know, we don't know much about the injury, but I just get the sense that, you know, with his size and the amount of weight that we're talking about putting on his knees, that's a lot of stress. And obviously I'm not a doctor, although I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. I would think that's a little bit more concern for him, you know, just the amount of weight that's going to be on that leg. And anytime you're talking about patellas and patellar tendons and that sort of thing, it makes you a little bit nervous. You know, at least the Brewers do have coverage at first base with Daniel Vogelbach. And then you can, you can mix and match over there if need be. Jace Peterson can play. So you're in okay shape, but, certainly you would like Rowdy Tellez in that mix as well. If everything is all things being equal. So again, you just got to kind of wait and see, hold your breath, see how the next, 10 days play out and where he's at and just go from there. But I think, the main concern, the main worry right now is just getting, Willy Adames back to as close to 100% as possible, back in the lineup and feeling good.
The bigger picture question would be who the Brewers are going to be lined up to face in the postseason. And, as great as they've been lately, as much as winning as they've done, they really haven't gained much ground at all on the San Francisco Giants for the best record in the National League. In fact, the Dodgers are still, I think at this point, they're only a game and a half now ahead of the Brewers. But the Dodgers have been able to stay pretty much in front as well. But the way it's structured, the second place team in the NL West is going to bounce into the wild card game. I think most fans would love to see the Dodgers needing a one game, sudden death win. Maybe the Reds or Padres sneak one out, and the Dodgers, a very dangerous team. A lot of people still picking them to win the World Series, find themselves on the outside looking in. Meanwhile, the Brewers are probably going to face the NL East champion, barring, I guess at this point, something unforeseen. That's the Braves. If the season ends today, it's probably going to be the Braves, but the Phillies can't be counted out. The Mets, are sort of lingering in there as well. I don't think the Braves and Phillies have pitching that's really going to scare you, especially in a short series. They don't have a lot of those hammers, Phillies more than the Braves do, because the Phillies do have Braddock, and Aaron Nola, who hasn't had a great season, but it's still a very quality pitcher. The Brewers just saw Kyle Gibson. I don't know if that's someone that frightens you in a short series. But overall, which team matches up better in your mind from what you've seen? The Braves kind of remade themselves at the trade deadline, but they're missing a couple solid hitters. Acuna and Ozuna won't be available. So, like, what which matchup do you think is more enticing if you're a Brewers fan?
I would prefer, I think if you're a Brewers fan, I think you would probably prefer taking the Atlanta Braves. They just do not have, the pitching staff is solid. They just do not have any of the, any guy that you look at and you're like, oh man, I don't want to face that guy. I think the Brewers fans obviously remember Zach Wheeler from the domination he put on him at the American Family Field. Was it last weekend now? Yeah. So last time he was here. Yeah. He just dominated the Brewers, and that's a guy that you could see going out, pitching game one or whatever, and giving the Brewers just total fits because he's just capable of doing that. The Braves, I don't see that really being the case. They've obviously got some weapons offensively that you worry about. Freddie Freeman obviously is Freddie Freeman. The trades that they made to basically reshape their outfield at the trading deadline, I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing that and being so aggressive, because that's helped kind of steady the ship for them. And Duvall and those guys have been really solid. And then Ozzie Albies has been tremendous. Dansby Swanson, who would have thought that guy would be nearing 30 homers, plus really good defensive player. So, offensively, they would scare me a lot more than pitching wise. Selfishly, I think us writers are rooting for the Braves just because of the direct flights. There's so many of them back and forth to Atlanta. That'd be great. And the setup down there at Truist Field is pretty good too. And then, looking ahead selfishly, I'd love to see an NLCS between the Brewers and the Giants, just because the going to San Francisco is much more fun for me anyway, as a writer, and just, being able to cover some playoff games at that ballpark would be pretty amazing. And I think too that the Brewers match up way better against the Giants than they do against the Dodgers.
Yeah, I think most teams feel the same way. The Dodgers still seem very loaded. There's a specter around them, obviously defending champs. They have just a ton of talent. Feels like they actually have a lot of untapped talent. They similar to Christian Yelich, Cody Bellinger has been nowhere to be found this year. And you just think, well, what if that guy suddenly gets hot? And what if Gavin Lux, one of their many prospects who could just like suddenly click? And there's a lot going on with the Dodgers. They're very dangerous. Brewers, though, had success against them in the brief period of time they saw them earlier this year, four-game series. They will close the year with the Dodgers, a three-game set. And the Braves, like you said, like offensively, they do scare you a little more. But even then, I mean, Duvall and Soler have been great since they brought him over. But, like, I don't know if the Brewers should be too concerned about those guys. Austin Riley having a phenomenal year. Freddie Freeman, a good year. Not an MVP-level year. He was MVP, obviously, last season. But, you know, this is maybe a down-ish year, as down-ish as you can be if you're Freddie Freeman. So, I think either matchup is fine. I think the Brewers will be heavily favored and quite honestly, at this point, probably a little disappointing if they don't make the NLCS. They've just had so many things go right here. Even if they go 8-10 the rest of the way, Todd, they're gonna have the franchise record for wins. That's 97 wins, unless my math is off, which it frequently is. That's incredible. I this team was so bad in May. I honestly wasn't sure, Todd. May 15th or whatever it was, wasn't sure it was a 500 team. Honestly, was not sure that they would get to 500. And now they're, 34 games above 500, most in franchise history. This is just I don't know if I can explain this season. 10 years from now, I don't know if I can say what in the world. I mean, obviously the pitching, but, like, this just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and it's – baseball obviously is a marathon and not a sprint. And, you know, the mindset of people today is, you know, you want instant gratification and what have you done for me lately and – it really, when you are around baseball for a long period of time and you look at the length and the breadth of a schedule, you realize that, you know, you just look at it, you take it in stretches, you know, and the people that were just up in arms 2 weeks ago about, oh my God, how could the Brewers have lost 2 of 3 to the Twins in Minnesota? And, oh my God, the Brewers lost all 4 games to the Royals. And how could this happen? And all these terrible things. Well, look at how quickly the script changes and the table gets turned and whatever cliche you want to use. But in the end, quality play, quality players wins out. And that's what the Brewers have been able to do, is put together quality play with a quality roster. Truly everybody has contributed on this team. That's one of the real, I think, when you look back at this team, the number of players that the Brewers have employed this season, a franchise record there as well, and the number of guys who have contributed and done things for this team to get to this position really, really is remarkable. It's more like, what you would expect out of a football team as far as numbers go. But, you know, the pitching obviously has done the heavy lifting. The offense, spotty throughout the season, obviously has come together here late, but still can be prone to stretches of ineffectiveness and just kind of head scratching, like, you know, not being able to hit these lefties who threw 85 miles an hour who are making their major league debut, those kind of guys. I can see where that can be kind of maddening for Brewer fans. But on the whole, when you look at everything that this team has accomplished to this point, the things they've overcome, the injuries, the COVID outbreak, et cetera, to be in this position, how can anybody complain? I don't think anybody is. Like you mentioned, we're talking about a team that is in great position to set a new franchise record for wins and, you know, looks like on an incredible roll here getting into the postseason and in really, really good position to maybe get to the World Series for the first time since 82. You know, the names that the Brewers had in 2011, you know, the Brauns and the Fielders and the Giovanni Gallardos and the Axfords and the K-Rods, that was incredible, obviously. But, you know, you look at the breadth of this team and just the quality from top to bottom, you know, there aren't as many sexy names, so to speak, but and it'll be interesting. It's something that we'll probably do, comparing rosters moving forward. But I would argue this roster from top to bottom is deeper, and, you know, certainly there's more quality in the pitching department. So it's going to be fun to see how it all plays out, and it's going to be fun to have a normal, quote unquote, normal October, you know, playoff run this season, fans in the stands, you know, regular setup for the playoffs and so forth. Kind of like the good old days. So I'm looking forward to it.
One last shout out before we go to Ted Simmons. The Hall of Fame induction was Wednesday. I'm not old enough to have seen him play, but was around when he was with the Brewers as a bench coach for a very short period of time. I don't know if it was bench coach now that I think about it, but he was here in a Brewers uniform for a season or a half season, and you really could appreciate sort of his thoughtfulness. He's very articulate, very engaging, interesting guy, and that definitely came through in the speech at Cooperstown. He of course was part of the 1982 Brewers team, which now has five Hall of Famers on it, and was here for a few seasons. And Brewers, you know, really got good when he got here. I mean, they were good a couple years beforehand. That's a very monumental trade. Before the 1981 season, he had never been to the playoffs with the Cardinals, oddly enough. He finally gets there with the Brewers in 81 and 82, goes to the World Series, eliminated by none other than the Cardinals. But super interesting and a huge part of Brewers history. Do you have any Ted Simmons stories? Did you remember seeing him play at all?
Honestly, I mean, I remember watching him play as a kid. I was in grade school at that point. I remember the trade that brought him over, and you know, the Brewers really kind of lining themselves up for you know, that those tremendous teams and the one that went to the World Series and everything. You know, he was really in the prime of his career at that point, switch hitting catcher, you know, had power, obviously a great defensive player. And it was, you know, as a kid, you were like, man, what a great crop of players you have on this team. You've got Yount, obviously Molitor, Cecil Cooper, Ben Ogilvy, Ted Simmons, Gorman Thomas, Pete Vukovich. I mean, went on and on and on. And he was just Raleigh Fingers, you know, like the name recognition on that roster was just through the roof. And Ted Simmons was right at the top of that that list. I guess for me, the thing that stood out and the thing that still amazes me to this day is just guys that are such good switch hitters like Ted Simmons was, and to have that kind of power from both sides of the plate and just how unique and difficult that is to do. Brewers obviously have a really good one right now in Eduardo Escobar. That's always fascinated me. It's hard enough to be able to hit the ball well from one side of the plate, but to be able to do it from two sides, both sides, and to do that over the course of your career, you know, hats off to guys who can do that. So, and by all accounts, just a really well-respected baseball man, great guy. You know, ran into him several times over the course of covering the Brewers, you know, as he was a scout and front office executive and everything for different teams. Always very, very good guy to talk to and very approachable and everything. So congratulations to him. Well-deserved.
Any last thoughts before I let you go, Todd Rosiak?
Let's see. I'm going to Detroit Tuesday and Wednesday. That's one more ballpark off of my personal list that I can check off.
You've never been to Comerica. Interesting.
No, I walked past it several times when I was covering the Packers, you know, going to Ford Field, but I've never actually been in it. So after I knock that one off, then I need to go to Baltimore and Boston next season. And that will leave me just Yankee Stadium on my list of teams or ballparks that I need to visit in person, cover games at in person.
Very good. So I've been to Comerica many times, including, speaking of no-hitters, 2007 when Justin Verlander no-hit the Brewers. So
there you go.
It was a little full circle serendipity.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off otherwise.
Yeah. No, that's really that's all that comes to mind for me at this point. I'm just just looking at it through my lens right now, my week, and looking forward to doing that. And then obviously the last homestand. A lot of stuff going on with clinching right at the top of that list. It should be a fun 10 gamer to wrap it up.
Brewers clinched in on the road both in 2019 and 2018, Cincinnati and St. Louis. I think I have that in order correctly. And so this will be a first time. Again, there is still a scenario where they clinch on an off day on Thursday before they come all the way back home, but they will start back up on Friday, first of a 10-game homestand, and there should be a clinching going on sometime either over the weekend or very early next week. Brewers' magic number is 5 headed into the week. Thanks for joining us, Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. We will catch you again soon, sir.
JR, always a pleasure.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. Find us on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. He's at Todd_Rosiak. And we will be with you again next week. Take care, everybody.